Hello, everybody. This is Craig Garber from kingofcopy.com with a very important audio success CD interview of the month. If you are in the business of selling something, this interview will impact you dramatically. I'm here today with Mike Young out of Dallas, Texas. Mike is, and please do not boo right away, Mike is an attorney, but he's actually a very sharp guy, and he's got a lot of good information, and he has a specific niche that's going to be very relevant to everybody listening to this, to all my members. So, Mike, I appreciate your time, first of all, and thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, Craig. Looking forward to it.
Well, start off, tell everybody, you know, who you are and, you know, your area of expertise, and we'll get moving from there.
Okay. Basically, what I do is I focus exclusively on internet law and marketing. So what I do is I basically help entrepreneurs take those online aspects of their business and protect themselves and help them grow in those areas so they're able to make more money and do so in such a way that they don't get in trouble with the government and minimize the risk of possibly getting sued by a dissatisfied customer or an ambulance chaser for that matter.
And how did you get into this field of law, and you know, how'd you become successful at it? And I know you are successful at it. I know other people that worked with you, and talk about that a little bit.
Okay. I kind of had a schizophrenic background, and not a mental health issue, but I was pretty much a big fan of politics and a big fan of computers. Those were the two things when I was growing up I always did. I started programming computers back about 1980. I was doing BASIC then and moved on to COBOL and a Wang system by the time I was in high school. In fact, one of my best friends got arrested by the FBI for doing hacking back in the 1980s when we were in high school together.
There you go.
At the same time, I was involved with politics and really didn't know which way I wanted to go. So when I went off to college and started doing a little bit of both, a little bit of computer stuff in college, and then also doing some politics when I worked for Jack Kemp in D.C., the Nicaraguan resistance, you know, the Contras, that type of thing. But decided once again, well, with that background, what am I going to do? So I went off to law school. And I went ahead and got an advanced degree in international law at Georgetown. And as I was going along, the technology just kept on improving. I was working with the bulletin board systems back then, the BBSs, and finally moved on into, once I became an attorney, started representing as the World Wide Web expanded, started representing internet clients. You know, anything starting with web design to, I don't know if you recall these, the cyber malls. The IMALs, those type of things. Those were the type of things that I started in the early days of the common use of the web, shall we say.
Quick question for you. You said Georgetown. You know, 20-something years ago, maybe even longer, I went to Georgetown, and this is a silly question, but I got to ask it. There's a bar up there. And I'm sure you didn't know many of the bars, Mike, but there's a bar up there, and it had, like, on its T-shirt, its logo was, you know, the elephant and the donkey. What was the name of that bar? Do you remember? Because it was a really cool place.
There's the Hawk and Dove in D.C. proper. I don't know if that's the one you're referring to or not. And they actually have separate bar rooms there depending on where you stand on the political issues.
Oh, that is so funny. That's a real clever idea. Now, I've always wondered, the reason why I'm asking, I'm going back up there, like, in the spring. I said, I got to take my wife to that place. It was a nice, you know, place like you could have a meal at, too. It wasn't just like a place to get drunk. But anyway, that was my one shot at trying to recall the place.
Well, the one thing most people don't realize is that for Georgetown, the law school itself is actually down by Capitol Hill near, you know, where Congress is at and whatnot, as opposed to on the Georgetown main campus.
Okay.
I spent some time down in Georgetown, don't get me wrong, as far as the bar scene was concerned, but probably not as much as I otherwise would if I had gone there for undergrad.
Gotcha. Okay, so talk about, if you're okay with this, you don't need to name names, but talk about maybe one or two cases you were involved with that I think people are going to be jarred when they hear some of the things that go on out there that they would ordinarily gloss over, but that if you are an active marketer online, you really shouldn't.
Okay. One example on that is dealing with the issues of absolute piracy that would go on. You know, give me any ability to take a look at any website that you've got, and with $200 in less than 24 hours, I can replicate your site and pretty much start selling a pirated version of what you've got. And it's done all the time, and how to stop that is another question, and it often varies depending upon which country the pirate is based in.
Where do you find most of the pirating out of?
Most of the pirating is out of Europe, Africa, and China. And they do. They have different responses as to how they deal with it, pretty much. The Europeans are very nasty when you talk to them about it. You know, you're an American. How dare you contact me? Well, you're pirating on my client's stuff.
Mm.
So what? But you're American. The African ones tend to say, "Oh, we didn't know. We'll stop." And the Chinese ones pretty much say, "You basically, you know, so sorry, won't do it again." And they just figure if you've retained an attorney, it's kind of a, you know, it's a cost of doing business. So just go find somebody else's stuff to pirate instead of yours.
Okay, so what you're saying is the Africans and the Africans and the Chinese will respond favorably to it. The Europeans may or may not, but they're going to be you know, idiots about it along the way.
Yes, I mean, it's very much an anti-American sentiment behind it, as in we're entitled to pirate your stuff because you're not one of us.
And this is in Eastern Europe, most of the stuff goes on, correct?
I've had two or three in the past year out of the UK.
Really?
Yeah.
Holy cow. You know, I had a guy one time, it's amazing. He sends me an email, and he was a member of my mastermind group. This is what really got me. And on a whim, you know, he had just left the group. On the whim, I looked at his, you know, signature at the bottom, and it had like, it was pointing to his newsletter. And I look at it, and I says, oh my God, he literally looks like he took my newsletter word for word and like plagiarized a copy. So I go to my assistant and I said, you know, hey, Sherry, do me a favor. Can you just, you know, sort of compare this and let me know? So, you know, 4 or 5 hours later, she sends me an email. She goes, this is the worst case of plagiarism I've ever seen in my life. She goes, it looks like in the beginning it was at least changing words. And then as he got along, he got lazy and he just started copying everything verbatim. And it just always amazes me. And of course, you know, I went to him and I said, you know, cut it out now. And he says, oh, you must have an old version. I said, yeah, this morning. That, you know, he goes, oh, no, that's not possible. Okay. But it always amazes me how, I mean, because so much of, you know, any individual success is tied to sort of like the vibe you put out there, you know? And if you're putting somebody else's ethos out there, how are you going to, you know, what happens for round two?
Yeah.
It's always amazing. Okay, so piracy is a big one. Anything else that's sort of common that, you know, people need to be aware of?
Deceptive practices with marketing, where people think it's a good idea to somehow shove somebody into a forced continuity program without disclosing that it actually exists.
Yeah.
And I mean, I know how much you deal with that with the people who will be listening to this call, but I mean, you know, it really should be, you know, clear, you know, what's fair out there. You know, if you're providing and delivering value, people will think nothing of subscribing into a continuity program with you.
Yeah, and we actually, I've discussed this amongst my various group. I know us, we actually go out of our way. We have it fully disclosed, like in the same size print as everything else in our sales letter. Then we put it twice in the shopping cart, and then once after that, and then on the when we're ordering by fax, even it's on there twice because, you know, and I didn't really know this was a problem until, you know, when people would cancel, let's say, with their newsletter, and, you know, their first contact would be, "I'm canceling this now, and you better shut it off," and so we'd be like, "Wow, that's kind of hostile," but then I started trying to cancel some continuity programs and they didn't care. They kept whacking me.
Yes.
And so then I understand why people do that. It's not like a personal thing against us. It's just that's the nature of how it goes a lot of the times, you know? And what is the penalty for that when you're doing that? Because I've heard, you know, stories from various people that have happened over the years. What is a typical penalty when you either don't disclose it fully or you don't cancel it on time?
Well, there's a variety of penalties. For one thing, if you have an irate consumer, they can actually push things with your credit card merchants to get your accounts canceled. So good luck trying to charge things in the future to your accounts. With regards to the government, you have both the federal level, for example, the FTC, that can come after you, including getting a court order to freeze your assets until everything can be sorted out by the court. Try to hire an attorney when suddenly all of your assets have been frozen by a court in a lawsuit against you claiming that you've done something wrong. The other one is at the state level, particularly with the state attorney generals. They have what they call a Bureau or Division of Consumer Protection, and they will do the same thing on a local level to you that the FTC does at the federal level.
Interesting. Very interesting. Yeah, I think I talk a lot about that in my book, as a matter of fact, about the places that, you know, how do you go out of your way to disclosure, and in no way am I, you know, pretending to give them legal advice, and I say that in there, but this has been my experience where the problem is, and you really got to be forthright. Not to mention, who the heck needs a bunch of people coming into your funnel and sit there giving you chargebacks and cancels and refunds? I mean, it's like, it's more headaches than it's worth.
Well, the latest scam with that is called the microcontinuity, where what they figured out is because they've been able to just see people into billing them for 2 to 3 months maximum before the cancellation orders start coming through.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll still sell it as a microcontinuity product. There's only supposed to be 2 or 3 billings on it. But in the meantime, they've got your credit card number, and they're already trying to cram you through by telephone or something else into an upsell into something else that you don't are going to be getting billed on. It's going to be a lot more than what that open-ended microcontinuity program was at the beginning.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. Some of the programs, I was watching a show on TV. Remember, I was even in the gym, and they were selling some weight loss device. Maybe you've seen it. It's like something for sit-ups. It's like a half of a... you know the round balls, but the exercise stability balls.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a small half a ball, and you know it was flat on the top, and you just did sit-ups up and down on it, and it was completely free. And I said, man, what is the real deal here? Because obviously it's not nothing's completely free. And I went to the website, and I'll tell you what, I really, really had to dig to find the continuity in there. And I don't know how people get away with it. You know, it always...
Well, there's a major internet marketer who shall remain nameless that's very big on continuity. I mean, there's nothing wrong with continuity, as we discussed, if it's done honestly.
Yeah.
And one of his sales letters this past year had 3 hidden continuity programs in it. And the third one was hidden below the order part where you put in your credit card information. You had to go down the screen all the way and uncheck a box not to be enrolled in that third continuity program.
Yeah, and I know you've been pretty vocal on your blog, and you know, are pretty forthright about stuff like that. And, you know, I think that's good. I mean, I think that people should do business honestly, because if you can't make money honestly, you really shouldn't be making money.
Yeah, we recently formed the Internet Ethics Council for that reason, and set up a code of professional responsibility for internet marketers. And it's basically, you know, memberships based upon that. It's, you know, you agree to comply with this, then you can be a member. If not, we're going to keep you out of the organization. And it's entirely a sign that there is a right way to do business online.
That's pretty good. Maybe if we have time, we'll talk about that before we go out. I just wrote that down there. Okay, so let's talk about, and I really appreciate your time on this, because this is very complicated. I want to talk about the new FTC guidelines. First of all,
okay,
what's the official name of these guidelines, and when do they go into effect?
Okay, the official guidelines is called the Guides Concerning the Use of Endorsements and Testimonials in Advertising.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's not really new guidelines. These actually are revised guides. What happened is the FTC, back in about 1980, put together the original guides. Well, obviously, we've had a lot go on, such as the Internet, since then.
Yeah.
And they decided to update them. And these revised guides will go into effect on December 1st, 2009.
Okay. Now, in a nutshell, right, and I've gone through the guidelines, and I'm a guy that's fairly competent and comfortable with legal documents. However, these are very broad. It's very broad documents, all right? Break, to the extent you can that even makes sense, break it down into like maybe whatever few different parts, and then let's see if we could explore these sections in the rest of this call.
Okay. One of the key areas on that is disclosure. And by what I mean by disclosure is letting the consumer know exactly what they need to know as far as what could affect what you're using to sell for content. For example, whether or not there's a relationship there that could affect what's being said on the page. Whether there's money changing hands, that type of thing. And basically what the FTC is saying is no more. Quit misleading people. And if you're going to be making claims about specific results, there's certain new hoops you have to jump through on that front as well. So basically major issues with regards to claims made, such as earnings claims or health-related results claims, or what one might call outcome claims, and also disclosure of types of relationships that could affect what's actually being used, such as testimonials or sales copy.
Okay, so we got really two big areas, disclosure and claims.
Yes.
So the way they presented it, the way they made it sound is that originally the guidelines were designed to sort of give more transparency to bloggers and social media users, because you'd have a guy or a gal saying, oh, I just got this book and it was wonderful and, you know, I think everybody should have it and, you know, if you want to buy it, it's right here, go click on this link, but really it's an affiliate link. And so they were concerned that, you know, maybe the book wasn't so good and the guy or the reviewer was just saying it to get some compensation. Is that fairly accurate?
That is very much part of it, where basically the person reading it would not have a clue that there was something motivating what was being written to them.
Right.
They would assume that it was unbiased, when in fact there was some considerable bias behind the content that was being used.
Okay, so let's talk first about testimonials, because everybody on that's listening to this call is a big proponent of testimonial using, as I am. It's very important to validate what you're selling. Obviously, what everybody else or what somebody else has to say about your product is far more important than what you have to say about your product. So what are the biggest areas of concerns with respect to testimonials first? You'd mentioned, you know, one of the things you always advise people to do is to get results-oriented testimonials. So, you know, Craig, I read your book and I went out and implemented these three techniques and they brought me in $17,000 from the campaign, as opposed to, Craig, I read this book, you're a great guy and you give good advice.
Mm-hmm.
Now, would that, you know, talk about some of that stuff.
Okay. First of all, if that claim that you just made misleads the average consumer to thinking that's going to be the typical results of buying your product, you've got a problem with the FTC.
Right.
What the FTC is wanting you to do is not provide results claims such as earnings claims unless you can support them with what the typical results are going to be. If you do not have the typical results, you can't simply put out samples of people who did succeed using your methods and then put a disclaimer at the bottom that say results are atypical. That's not going to work anymore with the FTC. There's been a lot of talk as to how this is going to be addressed, and because the FTC has not gone through any enforcement cycles because the guides haven't gone into effect yet, It's a lot of reading the tea leaves based upon where they've been in the past and where they're heading to. My contention, based upon what I'm seeing here, is you can still provide those types of testimonials, like you said, the $17,000 with these campaigns, but it's going to have to be much broader, in essence, a case study.
Right.
Which provides all the material facts that went into earning that money. The person that was already an experienced marketer, mm-hmm. had a nice list that they were already mailing to or emailing to, those things need to be disclosed. If they had three people working with them, and they were able to do it in 3 weeks because they have three full-time employees also working on this particular campaign, then that also needs to be disclosed.
Wow. So the problem is, my knee-jerk reaction to this is, and by the way, I don't necessarily disagree, because I don't think it's good to mislead anybody. The problem is, how is anybody to know what's reasonable and customary, or what's, quote, typical? Because, you know, typically what's happened is no one does anything and will make no money on this. So, you know, my knee-jerk reaction to this would just be to say something like that. Per FTC disclosure guidelines, most people will experience minimal results since most people do virtually nothing. I mean, what is... You know, where does that, how do you find out what the typical result is without, I mean, if, you know, Betty Crocker is selling cakes, you know, what's the typical result? Do they go out and survey 10 zillion people that eat their cake? I mean, where's the reasonableness in this?
It's a lot easier for a person who's selling something that's manufactured, like a let's say, a product through a manufacturer where they've actually done scientific testing to get, for example, FDA approval. Mm-hmm. Then you've got scientific studies that were used for the FDA that you can rely upon that provide what the results were. What we're talking about here, you're exactly right, because what the FTC is they're designed for consumer protection, but these are not businessmen.
Right.
They are not experienced entrepreneurs. The real world is clashing with what they like to do to protect the consumer, and their goal is to protect the consumer, not protect the businessman, which is very unfortunate in particular cases like this. So hypothetically speaking, what we're talking about here, you're exactly right. Let's say that, you know, a product is sold to 100 people, an information product about how to make extra money. Mm-hmm. And two of those people provide testimonials that say they made $100,000, the other one made $250,000. Well, ideally, you'd love to be able to average the testimonials together and come out with an average claim. The FTC's view on it would be take all the sales, throw them together, and if you didn't get anything from the others, assume it's nothing, pretty much and average it all together for all 100 of them. So,
that's,
you know,
amazing.
98 zeros, the 250 and 100,000, put all those together and divide it by 100.
What do you think is going to happen? Because this is obviously, not only is adherence going to be extremely difficult because it's virtually impossible. I mean, you'd have to create another business to run, to survey the results of the business you have. Am I making sense?
Yes.
So what is your knee-jerk or your knee-jerk reaction to what do you think is going to happen to adherence and to enforcement? Because I don't, you know, let's talk about, and we haven't talked about affiliate sales, but let's talk about like Amazon, you know,
mm-hmm.
how, you know, they've got millions and eBay, millions of vendors. How do you enforce that?
I don't think that it really can be enforced except to make examples out of people as a deterrent for others not to do it. And what I'm expecting will happen is in 99% of the cases that don't involve outright fraud, such as flogs, you know, the fake blogs that people used to sell with, and we can discuss those later if you want to. In those cases that are just, you know, somebody's crossed the line but they're not doing it in an overtly fraudulent way, I think 99% of the time it's going to be a nasty gram letter from the FTC saying, hey, we saw this, don't do it again.
Okay.
That's where I'm seeing it going, because they don't have the enforcement power. They really don't. I mean, even at the state level, you know, there's only so much they can do. They're going to make examples out of some high-profile names, you know, like the Kevin Trudeau's of the world.
Yeah.
And, you know, and for the smaller ones, they're going to at least give a warning shot saying, hey, knock it off. As far as the actual compliance is concerned, I really think the more you show good faith efforts that you're trying to do the best thing for your customer, the less likelihood you're going to have problems with the FTC. For example, let's say you have a testimonial on your site that focuses on some of the benefits and it says click here to read more. And then in there it pops up a case study, you know, 300 to 500 word case study that discloses the material facts. It may provide some income claims as part of that, as part of the whole picture.
Mm.
I don't think the FTC is going to be knocking that so hard, because you've gone out of your way to provide the consumer with enough information that they can make an informed decision based upon the information provided, as opposed to one line testimony that said, I made $17,000 in 3 weeks using your product. Thanks, Craig.
Well, I'll tell you what, those are useless testimonials anyway, stuff like that, candidly. I mean, those work in the hot business opportunity markets because the buyers are sort of nutty. You know, whenever I ask somebody for a testimonial and they give me something like that, I don't even use it because it's so clearly, you know, I had a guy one time saying, wow, I bought your system and I made, this is going to make me at least $200,000 this year. I mean, that's just it's so vague, no one's dumb enough to believe it. I mean, not my audience anyway, you know? So those are bad anyway. So it sounds like, just to recap, as long as you are clearly going out of your way to show some good faith, that you've proven your intent, and you know, so you've done your obligation. That doesn't mean that you're not going to get a letter, a slap on the wrist, or stop that. But if you're going out of your way to be genuine and show that, then you're sort of doing the best you can.
Yeah, that can be shown very easily, too, when you take a look at saying, hey, you know, obviously, sorry, goofed up, didn't mean to, and here's what I've been doing for the consumers. You know, any suggestions you've got, FTC, I'll be happy to work with you on this, you know.
Right.
You know, didn't know that we crossed the line here and certainly didn't intend to. Now, one thing that the FTC may not like, but I really think it should be included in there still, is they're saying that there's no longer that safe harbor provision about results not being typical.
Yeah.
I'm still telling my clients to include that language in their disclaimers anyway, in addition to everything else. And the reason why is, one, it shows an additional way that the consumer was informed.
Yep.
And two, just because it doesn't work with the FTC anymore doesn't mean it may not help you with somebody such as the FDA or a state attorney general's office coming after you.
Well, and it also goes to show intent.
Yes.
On your part. I mean, if just because you can't wrap yourself around it, that doesn't mean you're not going out of your way to disclose it. Interesting. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about now affiliates. Okay. What kind of disclosures or, you know, what are the big hot buttons there?
Okay. The FTC actually took this a little bit broader than affiliates, and I don't think most internet marketers realized it, but we'll use the affiliates as the driving force here, but the context is actually broader under a term called material connection.
Okay.
And basically that's that connection that creates enough of a relationship that there may be bias involved. And, for example, an affiliate, it's compensation.
Right.
I mean, clearly it is. I mean, it's, you know, click this link, order, and I'll get an affiliate commission. That's about as clear as it's going to be. But there is a material connection. But it's broader than that. It may be a situation where you're in a mastermind with somebody and you promote for each other. Or you have an informal list at a consortium, a syndicate, that type of thing, and you agree this month you're going to launch something out the door, and next month one of your friends is going to launch in the group, and you rotate and cross-promote for each other. It may be the fact that you're related to so-and-so. Mm-hmm. They may have served as the best man at your wedding. Anything that could have materially affected it that the consumer should have known, you really should disclose the fact that type of relationship exists. So the customer should be, or potential customers should be informed of, hey, there is a material connection here. You may want to do some due diligence.
So that means from now on when someone sends out, and this is what a couple of guys in my group had approached me and said, hey, Craig, you know, my good friend Mike Young has a new product, and I think you should buy it here. I've really enjoyed it, or whatever. At the bottom of that, or somewhere in that, and when I say at the bottom, I don't mean, you know, 30 lines below where it says, you know, you sign your name. You'd have to say, by the way, I am an affiliate of Mike Young's, and I am being compensated for this promotion.
Yes, the FTC did not give out clear guidelines as to what should be said, but I will tell you right now, I put on my website a freebie on that. It's free language that's a material connection disclosure people can throw on their emails. That you put right below the signature line so that it's very clear that, hey, you know, do your own due diligence. There is a material connection here. There may be compensation or something else being in, but there is a material connection. You should be aware of that.
Great. Where do people get that money?
You can get it at mikeyounglaw.com/WP.
On the site. Okay. mikeyounglaw.com/WP.
Yeah, that's where the blog's at. And right there on the main page, there's a link to it. Actually, I can pop it up right now. I believe it says, like, free affiliate disclosure language is the name of the title of the post.
Great.
Something along those lines.
Great. How often do you update your blog?
Once or twice a week, usually.
Yeah. I like I like the stuff you write. You're pretty, you know, candid and upfront about things. So I thought it was, I enjoy reading it.
Thanks.
Okay. Now, also, in going through that, it appears that even celebrity endorsements, they've got to be bona fide users of the product. Is that accurate?
Yes.
Okay. Doesn't that, you talk about narrow, you know, interfering with your business, doesn't that, if actually applied, narrow the scope of who you can use as a celebrity big time?
Yes, I mean, it does use that. I mean, who you can use as a celebrity, I mean, obviously you see people who try to in and run that by just name-dropping it all the way. I mean, for example, there's a particular marketer that you and I both know, and who shall remain nameless on this call, who, if there's a way to throw the term Donald Trump into a sentence, somehow Donald Trump gets wrapped up into his marketing.
Yeah.
And he's certainly not paying a dime to Donald Trump for using Donald Trump's name, but, you know, it's being used.
Well, what about now? I mean, so does Tiger Woods, how do they enforce this? Does the FTC go around to, you know, each of Tiger Woods' 15 different homes around the world to make sure he's got Cadillac in the garage, gas filled, and that it's driven? I mean, how does enforcement, you know, how do they even know if someone's used the product?
Well, I think what you're going to be seeing with that is, quite frankly, it's going to be the egregious cases where they're going to go out there and make an example out of somebody. I don't see Tiger Woods as being the one they're going to about a car.
Yep.
I could certainly see it if it was a well-known Hollywood actress that was 250 pounds overweight and that was using a particular diet plan.
Right. So like
supposedly was
Marie Osmond or something like that.
Yes, and it turns out that when in fact, you know, she used two of the best personal trainers, not Marie, but, you know, in the hypothetical,
yeah,
used, you know, two of the best personal trainers in Hollywood to sculpt her abs back again, and the diet was just kind of an ancillary thing.
I get you. So now if you are a celebrity, do you have to say on the television commercial that you're being compensated for this endorsement? You have to disclose that, or?
I'm seeing more and more of that where they're actually throwing it in bold text on these, like these infomercials, that thing where it says compensated endorser. You're seeing it particularly with the, for example, the insurance things.
Where, right.
You know, where overpriced life insurance is sold with a celebrity endorser.
Like, what's that guy's name from Grape? Not, you know what I'm talking about? The heavyset guy with the glasses, or Robert Young, I think his name. What's that guy? Not Robert Young.
There was Wilford Brimley.
Yes,
one.
Wilford Brimley, right.
And Ed McMahon used to do it at one time. I mean, obviously he's passed away, so it would be moot. But yes, it's the same type of concept where it'll be out there, where it'll be disclosed. I don't think they're going to be moving it to words unless they have to at the end, like the car dealers do on a radio ad or something. But I think it's literally going to be a situation where it's more just prominently flashed onto the screen, compensated endorser. Or, celebrity is compensated or something of that nature.
They don't have to disclose the amount of compensation, or do they?
There's nothing in the FCC that says that. It's just that you just need to make the consumer aware that there is something there that could affect what's being said. It's not just the celebrity that thought this was on their product and decided to go out there and do it, you know, as a charitable act. You know, it seems kind of silly, but, you know, you figure that the typical consumer, as far as the FCC is concerned, probably is somebody who is at a fifth grade reading level.
Right.
And that's, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. But that's, you should assume that they're not talking about somebody that has, you know, 3 PhDs and speaks 7 languages.
So this is the same way, I guess, in print media, that when you run an advertorial in the newspaper, you have to put advertisement at the top or at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to put celebrity endorsement compensated or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Now, one thing we mentioned several times the word consumer. One of the ways to reduce risk with the FTC is if you're selling a product or service that could possibly be twisted to B2B as opposed to B2C, that's likely to reduce your risk of getting on the radars for consumer protection, because they assume that if it's a business-to-business transaction, you're dealing with more sophisticated people, and it doesn't make for good press releases and that type of thing. It's, hey, we protected businessman A over here being misled by businessman C.
Say that again now. You lost me there. So they are going to give you the benefit of the doubt, is what you're saying?
I'm saying that you're less on the radar, because, I mean, Federal Trade Commission, you know, they have a division called the Bureau of Consumer Protection. It's not the Bureau of Business Protection.
Okay, so
and
like...
The same thing with the State Attorney General's office. So they're focusing on the consumer as an individual. They're not focusing on B2B transactions, business to business. So if you have a way to spin your particular product or service as B2B, even if some of your customers happen to be consumers, you're reducing your likelihood of even being looked at by these investigations by virtue of the fact of what you're pitching out the door appears to be a B2B offer.
All I could say is yes. Because that's all I sell to is
and what I mean by that, in that not biz op, as in
sure, yeah. If you're selling like me, like you're selling to other entrepreneurs and business owners, and your stuff is clearly marked for, you know, geared towards them, or if you buy a mailing list of names of business owners, I mean, you drop some direct mail in, I got to believe that what you're saying holds true. Or if you're advertising, And in your ad, it says if you own a business that's doing more than $100,000 in revenue, this might be for you. That probably fits what you're talking about.
Yes, let's take your business to the next level.
Yeah. Okay. That's
that type of thing. Not that, you know, are you a stay-at-home mommy who wants to become a mommy blogger and earn riches? I mean, that's the type of thing that they're looking out against, not what we're talking about here.
Right, right. I would ironically the door is open. This massive bug just flew in here. Ironically, I wouldn't be surprised if there's a bit of an outrage on the consumer end here, because that, you know, that BizOp marketplace is just so rabid sometimes. I mean, you got to realize, well, I know you do realize, these guys go from one offer to the next. And if, you know, it's kind of like cutting off the supply of drugs for some of these folks where, you know, now I can't buy this and I can't buy that and this is disclosed and it's no longer fun. You know, it's going to be interesting to see how that shakes out.
Well, where I'm seeing it heading is that both from a regulatory standpoint and from a marketing standpoint is what we've seen with the MLM and network marketing industries. And the reason for that is the FTC has a playbook to come from. They said we really have dealt with MLM and network marketing. We know that like the back of our hand because we've been dealing with it for decades. Now we're trying to find ways to regulate and control what's going on online. So how do we do that? Well, let's go to the old playbook. So they're starting to put things into place, for example, to impose liability on affiliate program operators for the representations by their affiliates. Well, that's no different than what they do now as far as network marketing companies, making them liable for the downlines that go out there and misrepresent a nutritional supplement as being a cancer cure.
Right.
So I think the marketing reaction to that you're going to see is selling happiness as opposed to money. And you see, you know, the same thing that you see with a lot of these MLMs and network marketing industries, even if money may be the ulterior motive of make money, it's more of you're unhappy for a certain reason. You may be stuck in a dead-end job, in an unhappy marriage or whatever. Here's something that can make you happier. And our testimonials, everything's going to be geared towards that. And, oh, by the way, you can make money, which helps you be happier.
So they're just going to change the marketing angle on it. So like everything else, they're going to adapt. It's kind of like the financial services industry. You know, everybody said, you know, I was a financial planner years ago, and, you know, every time there's a big uproar, you know, years ago it was, you know, people wanted to participate in the market, so they opened up equity index annuities. And then they fell apart, and then it's the next thing. So what you're saying is necessity is the mother of invention, and everything is going to evolve here to, you know, the next way to do what you need to do within the means that you can do it in.
Yes, absolutely. And if somebody, you know, as a smart online marketer, if I was to take a look at the models, I would take a look at the biggest, most reputable MLM companies and see how they've reframed everything to get away from the earnings claims or the particular health claims to sell happiness. And, you know, as the primary thing that's really being sold without saying that.
Interesting. Very interesting. Well, thanks. That's a good, that is very good. So if for you guys looking at what do I do, you know, Mike's just giving you the ticket. You're going to have to reposition what you're doing as the benefit is not the money making, it's the something else. And whatever that is, you're going to have to figure that out in your marketplace. And that now becomes, if you're a good marketer, that becomes your strength.
Absolutely.
Okay. We talk about Amazon. In your free report, and I think we alluded to this pretty much in the free report on your site, which was really good. One of the comments you make is the best way to avoid entanglement with the FTC is to comply by avoiding unsubstantiated or deceptive claims. You know, like I said, we're pretty vigilant about doing that now, but I somehow can't, because of the vagueness or the nebulous or the open-endedness of this, I can't somehow feel there's another catch to this that, you know, sets even guys up with integrity for problems. Am I just being paranoid, or, you know, what are your comments or thoughts on that?
I think if you're making the good faith efforts, the FTC is going to recognize that with all the things, for example, we've been discussing today, you know, the clear disclosures, the material facts, you know, material connections, all these things. If put together, the FTC is going to look at it and perhaps say, hey, we caught you doing this. We really don't like it. Stop it. But the ones they're really going to go after, and I really see it happening, are the major marketers who are just committing out-and-out fraud, and then the behind-the-scenes people who are setting up the Kyberry, you know, all these other things, the flog sites, where they automatically run you into a hidden continuity scam, that type of thing. And those are the ones the FTC is going to look at and say, no, absolutely outright deceptive, absolutely unsubstantiated what you're saying here that, you know, for example, I know Oprah's suing because people were claiming that she was, you know, supposedly had endorsed these acai berry products.
Right. He's talking about the Mona V ACAI, that stuff?
Yeah. I mean, I had one approach me yesterday, and I mean, I will not go into details on it, but I took, you know, one look at the site's domain name, and it was no. Heck no.
Well, are these, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, it's those are the things I think that the slapdowns are going to come hot and heavy on.
So are these, like, for example, you'll be on Facebook or almost, and my son's a great example. He's always on T-Nation. It's a really big bodybuilding site. And every time you go over there, you have, and you see these ads all over now. It's a young kid, get ripped in 3 weeks, and, you know, he's gone from, you know, like average looking to completely shredded in 3 weeks. And it's completely free, of course. It's acai berry, which, if you read the scientific take on that, has absolutely nothing to do with weight loss. There's not a fiber of weight loss promoting stuff in there. Anyway, and it takes you through, it's free, and you get a couple of bottles of this, and I've never read the whole thing, but I got to believe the continuity is in there. That's what you're referring to?
Yes, in fact, if you take a look at the free, almost every one of the sites, because it's a small group that are running these things, and they'll set up an offshore holding company, they'll run it for like 6 months, burn it, then they'll run it and set up under another entity and do the same thing,
wow,
hoping they're not going to get caught and nailed. And then you've got the newbie marketers just think, hey, somebody's making money on this, so let me go rip it off and set up my own site and try to do the same thing with limited success, but they're doing engaging the same deceptive practices. But invariably, every one of those sites uses the same fake pictures. They're running them off. The names will change per site. And if you go down to the fine print at the very bottom, usually what I've seen, it's a light gray background outside of the sales text, and then in a dark, slightly darker gray font, they will put in there that you're being charged anywhere from $49 to $89 or even $129 a month after that for these nutritional supplements.
And again, the issue isn't that you're being charged. The issue is it's being deceptive.
Yes.
Right, I get you. Okay.
I mean, there was a gentleman that was doing it offline, Vincent James, who, you know, went to prison for a while for that. I mean, he freely admits that he's back into marketing these days. But, I mean, it was the exact same thing of not fully disclosing what was the continuity aspects of it.
And he was the guy who was doing it in Arizona with the penis extension or penis something pills?
I'm not exactly sure what all he had involved, but that wouldn't have surprised me.
Yeah, I think he was out in Arizona, and it was, from what I understand, I don't know the guy, and, you know, maybe, I'm sure he's a decent guy, I don't know anything about him, but I think the story was he was doing something with penis pills or with penis extension pills or something like that. That was what I had heard. This is,
I mean, they're taking this stuff serious. I mean, there was a gentleman this past year, and I mean, I took some flack for criticizing him coming back from the marketplace so soon. He pled guilty to a felony for selling fake medicines.
Well,
and it was a continuity program. I mean, basically, he was, you know, having e-books written in the Philippines and pretending he was a medical professional, and then he was selling these nutritional supplements and continuity programs and stuff.
And they weren't really nutritional supplements, or they weren't, was the claims, what was the problem about that? Because that was a pretty widely very widely publicized case. What was
there were things like he was selling female infertility pills, things to lower your cholesterol.
We're not
talking joke products at all. I mean, you know, some of the stories I had that were emailed to me from people who had been, you know, my daughter was extremely sick with such and such a disease, with kidney disease, and I went and bought the product, you know, and she ended up in the emergency room. Well, you know, you got to question the wisdom of giving your daughter something that was bought online like that anyway, but, you know, you got to feel for these people who thought somehow they were getting, you know, a cure.
Well, and so the products had never shown any proclivity, or there was no scientific basis that they did anything what they were saying. Is that what the issue was?
Yeah, and the fact that this gentleman who's an admitted high school dropout was providing medical advice and pretending otherwise. And, I mean, in the so-called medical studies were being transferred from product to product, and there was nothing to substantiate the medical studies that were supposedly backing him up.
Right.
You know, the product for cholesterol supposedly was done by X university study, then you could turn around and the female infertility pill also, lo and behold, had the same stats.
Wow, yeah, because, you know, and those are things like that are pretty, you know, when people, I mean, infertility is pretty depressing for people who have to go through that. If you're trying to have a baby, I mean, it's a very desperate emotional state you're in, too. Mm-hmm. You know, and I read the, I tell you, it was really scary reading the write-up on that, you know, from the, I don't know, you know, it was like a 10-page PDF I saw somewhere online where the guy would have gotten 10 years and instead he got 10 years probation, but he had to surrender like a couple million dollars worth of assets. And I don't imagine that's, it was pretty scary reading it.
I was actually the one who released that online because I was tired of hearing people say, well, he didn't do anything bad and he's reformed. So I went ahead and ordered a copy of the actual documents and posted them on, and they kind of spread like wildfire. And I had nothing against him personally. I have the problems with the deceptive practices that were engaged in at the time. And then when he came back online, supposedly rehabilitated, started doing the same thing, but with earnings claims as opposed to medical claims.
Well, I think if you go to jail, most of the time, none of those guys are guilty.
Yeah.
If you actually go into the prison, a few people will say, you know, it's like anything else, Mike. People, you know, talk about something simple like DUI. You know, nobody goes out and nobody who gets caught ever thinks they're going to get caught, I think, on anything. So it's unfortunate. But anyway.
You're correct. I mean, what does it do to a family when some of the assets are all seized and, the breadwinner is not tossed in jail because somehow a line got crossed?
It's very unfortunate. But I look at that and like, I'm probably not a guy that needs to, I say not a guy needs to worry. That scares the crap out of me candidly, because I'm not, I'm very happy not being in prison or not, like breathing and being able to look at myself in the mirror at night. So that I would be scared to death about that stuff. You have put together something, and you are kind enough to let me promote it as an affiliate, and I think it's an excellent resource. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah. What happened is there was a market that wasn't being met. Internet marketers who couldn't afford to pay or out there a large amount of money for customized website legal documents. It just wasn't economically feasible under the business model or for whatever reason to go out there and pay, $5,000 to $10,000 for customized docs. And so what I did is I put together a set of legal templates that basically are generated by software. A person enters in a little bit of information, and within 17 minutes or less, they hit a button and it generates out all the website legal documents in template form, and they can just upload them to their site and they've got them. We launched a year ago the first version of the software. It's since become the number one software of its kind on the internet, and it's called Website Legal Forms Generator. And we just launched this week version 2.0, which has 10 of these forms in it, and they're reflecting the new FTC guidelines based upon what I saw in them. We did some modifications and added some additional documents. So not only is there the privacy policy, but there's also terms and conditions of use. Things dealing with affiliate compensation disclosure, refunds, return policy, that type of thing, and we put that together into a nice package, and we've launched the second version of the software this week.
What are some of the forms again? Go over those again.
Okay, I can actually give you a full list if you'd like.
Yeah. Talk about it.
Okay, let me grab up the actual list because
we're trying to sell something here. We got to be specific.
All right. Let me,
take your time. I'm going to talk. They want to hear my voice.
Yeah, for a question of the old internet connection is not running as fast.
Hey,
as
tell me, it's at kingofcopy.com/protection. So let me.
Yes.
I'm going to pull it up. I'm going to sell it
for
you.
I've got it right now for you.
Go ahead.
The new version has terms and conditions of use, has a privacy policy, has an anti-spam policy, an external links policy. It's got an earnings disclaimer. It's got an affiliate agreement if you're actually running an affiliate program.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got a DMCA notice, which is called the Digital Millennium Copyright Act notice. Now, in addition to that, in addition to modifying those and updating them based upon the FTC guidelines, we put more in the version 2.0, we've just added three new forms. One of them is the health disclaimers for people who are selling, such as weight loss or nutritional supplements.
Right.
We're also doing the refund and returns policy, and then we're doing a specific document called a compensation disclosure document, which is designed to disclose out that there is some type of material connection there whether it be, you know, you're related to the person that you're writing about or you're an affiliate for them, that type of thing.
Now, so these are critically important. Question for you, that last one you talked about, the affiliate compensation disclosure, that would have, you couldn't just put a blanket of that on your website, or could you? Can you just put that form on your website that says, you know, from time to time we're going to be doing this and we have an affiliate relationship? Does that cover every single email that you do, or do you need to disclose that on a, you know, on a per issue or per transaction basis, per occurrence basis?
What I'm recommending for this is, you know, putting this type of document on there to show evidence of good faith. In addition to that, we're providing a banner, an image banner a person could put on there. For example, if they're running it on a blog, they can put it in the sidebar, or they could put it elsewhere on the page. So when any time somebody goes there, they're just taking a look at it, and they may just assume it's an advertisement, but it says in bold letters, hey, there is a material connection here. Person can click on that banner, and it will take them right back down to that compensation disclosure. So it's additional evidence to the FTC and other government agencies that you're going out of your way every time somebody reads something on there that, you know, there's a material connection that might exist here. Do your own due diligence.
Great. So for like $20 a form, you get all these things, and you're good to go, and you're in compliance with the new FTC guidelines and everything else you need to be.
Yes, that's correct. It's at 247, but we're running it down at 197 right now.
Great. This is
so excellent. A little bit less than $200.
Awesome.
And plus, there's some very cool bonuses that are thrown in, too. So.
Is this run on Mac and PC or just on PC?
Just on PC. We looked at doing a Mac, and then there was a report that came out that said over half of Mac users also have a Windows OS PC in their house.
Yeah.
We ran the numbers and said, this doesn't make sense to do a separate version right now.
So I can use this. I have a Mac, and I'm one of these guys that doesn't have Windows, but I have a Windows computer here. So if I put it on there, I could still generate the same forms. Correct?
No, it's Windows OS.
So if I put it, what I'm saying is it'll create the same forms, and I could just import them or send them over to my Mac, right? Because, I mean, it'll probably create it on what, like a Word document or something, or an HTML?
Yeah, it'll create some in HTML.
Great. So
HTML, format the HTML however you want to, or don't format it, just upload it onto your site.
Great. And does it talk about in there where you suggest you put some of these forms?
No, but I mean, I discussed one of the things that's with version 2.0 is I'm doing a course that goes over for 10 weeks. It'll cover each of those documents, key elements of them, and why it's important, and those types of things. And that'll be part of it is the placement.
Great. Okay. And I appreciate you letting me promote this kingofcopy.com/protection. If anybody wants that, and I'm going to purchase that myself because I am, you know, we've got documents, but, you know, for $200, you can't protect yourself enough. That's what I say. All righty. I really appreciate your time on this. I wanted to, you know, I went at this, and my original intent was to sort of like, you know, put a summary together in my newsletter, and I realized I was biting off a lot more than I can chew because it's you know, the context is they wrote this for attorneys. They didn't write this for consumers. They may be trying to protect consumers, but, you know, God forbid the consumer that tries to read it, you know. But it was very convoluted, and I really appreciate your expertise in explaining all of this to us as well. Any last comments? People could find your site at MikeYoungLaw.com.
Yep.
Anything
else? MikeYoungLaw.com. And if they want to take a look, they're always welcome to go to InternetEthicsCouncil.com and take a look at the Code of Professional Responsibility. My feeling is if a person lives up to the Code of Professional Responsibility, they'll be doing perfectly well online. It's designed to help people do ethical marketing online.
Let me ask you a question. Do you guys have, this is interesting, you know the Norton antivirus thing that, you know, it's a little tab that says this website was checked for viruses or something. I'll tell you exactly what it says because it's on my homepage. It says here, McAfee Secure, tested 18th November. You know, it has a little thing that basically you click on it and says that there's no viruses or no breaches of security in your thing. Are you familiar with that at all?
Yes.
Okay. So we use that. Now, I've had guys in my mastermind group use it, and it actually suppressed their response. Very strange. It boosted our response by, it was a pretty good number. I'm going to say somewhere between 18 and 28%. But let's be conservative. Say it was only 18%. Are you guys going to have something like that?
It's part of the membership. They actually get members actually get a banner that they can put on their site that shows that they are a member of the Internet Ethics Council. And we're taking this seriously. This is not a cosmetic thing. Mm-hmm. We believe you can do well by doing well. Mm-hmm. You abide by the code. You can, and qualify as a member. Then you're allowed to put, the banner on your site and have a link over to the membership directory so that anybody can pop over to it and still stay on your sales page and be able to verify that, in fact, you are a member. And if, we get complaints, we've got a board of advisors that are experienced marketers, copywriters, attorneys that are going to take a look at it and say, yay, nay, and, think nothing about throwing somebody out the door that's intentionally going out there and engaging in deception and trying to use the ethics banner, some way to hide what they're doing as being wrong.
But I'm not going to be forced to hang out with a bunch of attorneys if I join, am I?
No. In fact, those are just informal board of advisors to the ethics council that they'll get the complaints sent to them to take a look at and say, hey, was the line crossed here or not? And it's all based upon the code. The code is very simple. It's seven things that one should be doing online. You'll recognize them. You do it in your businesses. I mean, it's not a, it's nothing designed to trick anybody. It's just designed to say, hey, let's do things honestly and ethically, and we can profit in the process. And I mean, I'm a big fan of Benjamin Franklin, and he always referred to doing well by doing well.
Yeah.
I mean, he found one of the first postal services in the colonies, where delivering mail by horseback. But he also owned the newspaper and had the largest distribution in the colonies because he created the distribution system as a public service.
He's also a bizarre writer. If you've read any of his older stuff, it's quite bizarre. Have you read any of his stuff that he wrote?
Yes.
No, it's out there, man. All righty, so that's at Internet Ethics Council, and you can sign up here and everything?
Yeah.
Okay, great. So Internet Ethics Council, to get Mike's package, kingofcopy.com/protection. Anything else? Any other last-minute good news, bad news, what to look for, what to look out for?
Just what to look out for is if there's anything out there that you think you would want to know as a customer when you read something about the product that you're selling, then you probably ought to disclose it. And that's just fair. I mean, you take a look at it and, if you were saying you were buying a product, the same product that you're selling from a competitor, what would you want them to disclose that you know about your stuff that you're not putting in your copy now?
So do unto others as you would have others do unto you.
Exactly.
There you go. Mike, I really appreciate it. I never thought I'd have an attorney on here. I like what he had to say. Add to that. So, I think I have to go buy some lottery tickets today or whatever. But I sincerely appreciate your time and your expertise on these things. And you've really helped clear up a lot of this stuff. And work with Mike. He's a good guy. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Ray. Glad to help.
All righty. Everybody, I'll speak to you next month. Pay real close attention to this stuff that Mike went over. Do not take it lightly. It's very serious. If you take your business seriously, you need to take this stuff seriously because, it's like a guy once told me, you never get hit by the bus you saw coming. So thanks for listening, and we'll speak to you next month. So long.